Where Will You Be When the Magina Send for You? With special guest Jeff Colnut. Episode 7, Season 2 of the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast. Welcome to the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast. Coming to you from the glacial dumping grounds known as the Michigan Basin, I'm Michelle.
And I am Wayne.
And we are a Michigan-based husband and wife educator and podcasting duo that, after having a UFO sighting in March of 2018, have started to examine UFOs and other paranormal topics within Michigan and beyond.
Topics include UFOs, the paranormal, conspiracy theories, ghosts, alternative history and archaeology, cryptids, and all things strange and paranormal. So sit back, grab a drink, and come along with us on this journey down the paranormal rabbit hole. Hey, everybody, we're back. What's going on?
Hello, everyone.
Boy, do we have a very interesting show for you today.
Yeah, Wayne was flying solo on this one while I was out of town.
Yeah, unfortunately, for a funeral for a family member, and I was very sorry that I could not make it out, but I had 1 week of school still to go that I had to finish up work, and that was finals week, and it is finally over. Thank you, baby Jesus. So another year down, few more to go. So welcome to the show. Tonight we have Jeff Colnut coming on, a fellow Michigander, and he has some interesting takes on what are called the Tall Whites.
Children of Orion, the Magina, whatever name you want to call them.
They are here for you. So that's going to be very, very interesting conversation we're going to have. And also, I'm going to be playing a little bit of what some people say is their language that was recorded. So you guys will be hearing that before we cut into the interview. So be ready for that. All I can say is hold on to your hats, because it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, there's no trying to decipher what they're saying.
No. The language, if it is a language, is totally foreign to us. But you guys will hear that soon.
Well, before we get to that, I think it's that time, Wayne.
What time is it?
It's time for What's in the News.
Oh, yes. What is in the news?
Straight out of WXYZ Detroit, Texas Zoo warns of possible chupacabra sighting. Amarillo, Texas. Zoo officials in Texas are scratching their heads over what they saw in a surveillance video.
I know what it is.
Oh, man.
It's Crash Bandicoot.
It is Crash Bandicoot. So, and when people look at this in the link, they'll probably say the same thing if they know anything about that video game. But the surveillance video was taken on May 21st of this year at 1:25 a.m. This does not look any animal known to man. Now, officials at the Amarillo Zoo are wondering if this could be a chupacabra. The image of the two-legged creature was captured around 1:30 a.m. on May 21st. Stop laughing.
It's horrible.
Some people speculated that it was simply a person in a costume, while others said it could be a coyote on its hind legs. City officials said the creature never entered the zoo and zoo animals were safe. But the cameras weren't.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. This is ridiculous.
You know what? When I was looking through my apps and the title came up with Chupacabra, I'm like, oh, I've got to read this. And I looked at the photo, and guys, you're going to have to check out the show notes and the links for this one.
A lot of people probably know exactly what we're talking about, because this is making national news all the way around that this could be a chupacabra. Okay. No, it's Crash Bandicoot. It's ridiculous.
I just need a video game controller right now.
It looks like, hey, somebody turned the light on me. It's like that freeze moment, you know?
And guys, check out the image in the links.
Yeah, let's leave this one alone.
Yeah, that one, we would love to hear your emails or anything on our Facebook group, what you think this is. We might have to make sure that we upload that into the group, too, to see.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is...
I could have some fun with that.
Oh, man. But on to a little bit serious news.
Well, as serious as it can get, out of Sacramento, KFBK News Radio. Triangular UFOs seen in California are stranger than aliens. And, of course, they host the picture of the triangle. So... Absolutely.
That looks like the one we saw too. So when you go to this link on the for the news, you're going to see the triangle with the three lights in each corner, but no light in the center. And that's kind of the one that we saw.
This was just released on the 14th, so just a few days ago. Black triangular objects emitting a strange white glow were seen hovering multiple times over a U.S. Navy air base in California. According to Daily Star, several servicemen had spotted the UFO and did not know how to explain what they had seen. Former Navy serviceman Angelo Aceta resided at Leemore Naval Air Station in Leemore, California in 2011. He explained to UFO researcher Ryan Sprague that this object was no ordinary plane. I noticed an object in the night sky. It was too slow to be an F-18 Super Hornet. I'm very familiar with these planes because of my job. Aceta wrote to Sprague. Aceta described the object to be lit up on each corner. The lights were on each point of the triangle. They were extremely bright and gave off a white glow. He told Sprague that the object moved moderately fast and almost looked as if it were gliding on water. By the time that he had centered in on the object to get a good look, it sped away into thin air. When Aceta told his superior at the base what he had seen, his superior did not take it seriously. My superior immediately laughed and jokingly asked if I had been drinking on the job. Aceta and a few other servicemen witnessed the strange triangular object glide over the base multiple times after the initial sighting. Daily Star mentioned that every time they saw the object in the sky, there were never any naval planes around. It is still inconclusive as to what these objects are. No, what it sounds like he described is exactly the same thing that we witnessed in 2018.
The only thing that I would say is that I wish he would have tried to give some kind of dimensions, because we don't know. In this article, there's no talk about how big he thought it was on each side, which way it was going, you know, current weather conditions, nothing.
The details are very limited, but it's interesting that it's still being talked about on news radio out in Sacramento. So we'll have to follow this and see if any more articles come our way.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Michelle, why don't we go ahead and get this interview going?
Well, let's go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about Jeff. So Jeff Colnott is a West Michigan native who has dedicated most of his life to playing music. In recent years, he has developed a huge passion for the UAP phenomenon. The testimonies of David Fravor, Bob Lazar, and Charles Hall have changed his worldview. Jeff is an enthusiastic researcher and has also become an experiencer starting in February of 2022. Jeff has adopted the viewpoint that the beings that pilot the UAPs are also responsible for the vast majority of all paranormal activity. He believes that the future human hypothesis is the most compelling theory for the UAP phenomenon. Jeff has conducted field expeditions at a haunted location in West Michigan and has received compelling results that were verified by witnesses.
All right, so as promised earlier in the show, we're going to go ahead and lead into this interview with Jeff. with some sounds that is reported to be the language of the children of Orion.
Also known as the Tall Whites or the Magina.
You be the judge. Episode of the podcast, we have a newcomer into the fields of paranormal and UFO investigations. He's an experiencer and a researcher, a Michigander, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot from him in the future. So, ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Jeff Colnott to the podcast. Jeff, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on.
Yeah, it's just going to be you and I tonight, as Michelle is off doing family things. We've had a couple deaths in the family, so she's out of state doing the whole family reunion slash funerals. And, you know, we just got hit with a lot of things at the end of the school year. So,
yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
With that being said, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you involved in this topic or the topics of UAPs and paranormal?
Yeah, I'm a West Michigan native. I've lived a few other places. Most of my life I've been into music. As far as paranormal, I'm kind of primed for it in the sense that I've always liked the idea of it. Pop culture's kind of primed me for it. But yeah, as far as, you know, serious investigation, there was just never, it was always the stigma, never not enough evidence. And it was just a big question mark of, you know, kind of what's going on with it, you know, and I couldn't really, didn't know where to dig and so on and so forth. But what ended up happening, well, you know, post 2017, there's been a lot of developments with everything, but I saw testimonies of David Fravor. I think he was on Lex Fridman. And Bob Lazar, Rogan, I don't know if Fravor did Rogan or not. Maybe he did.
Yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I saw those interviews and that really piqued my interest that, you know, our pilots or fighter pilots are tracking these types of things. And then that kind of really sent me down the YouTube rabbit hole, eventually the book rabbit hole. And I came across the testimony of former Nellis Air Force Airman Charles James Hall, who was at Nellis in the mid-60s, and that his story was so bizarre, it had a high truth value to it for me. And then I basically, that kind of led me down to other people and an Australian author and researcher by the name of Ryan Musgrave Evans, who really kind of helped fill in the pieces around Charles Hall's testimony. And he has his own experiences, and I have recently have had experiences which have a lot of the common points that a lot of these people are reporting on. So okay, that's just kind of the reason, more or less 2 years, it's, you know, development, you know, I'm 40 now, so I've got roughly half my life behind me, so it's hitting me right in the middle. So
usually there's something that gets people more involved, and you had mentioned that you're an experiencer and things that have been going on since around 2017 or so with you. So can we dig into that a little bit? And what was the tipping point? Because pop culture can only go so far. I mean, it does prime us all, but what happened?
Well, the tipping point was, it was those interviews with Lazar and Fravor and the Charles Hall Millennia Hospitality series and his subsequent presentations and films. It was such a bizarre and strange story. It drove my curiosity through the roof. And I guess it would say that, because it captivated me. I read his books, and it was some of the, you know, I'm kind of being a little fanboy here, but it was some of the most interesting and also emotional testimony I've ever heard. He bonded with these people, and that's what they actually are. They're not aliens. They're actually a different type of people. And it just struck all kinds of emotional points, and just from physiology to psychology to all these different areas. It was just extremely interesting.
Now, did he write about the tall whites? Is that the, am I thinking of the,
yeah,
the
right? Yeah, that's what he called them. They, in those days, it was pre-disclosure. They didn't want disclosure at that time anyway. And so what they've done through, well, we'll get into it if we have time, through many thousands of years, is kind of trick people and misdirect them into thinking they're A phenomenon or B phenomenon. In this case, they didn't directly tell him. The Air Force didn't directly tell him either. He was picked because he was intelligent, but he was also very calm to be kind of like a test human for them to interact and learn with. And but yeah, it's the same dude, and he's talking about the same people. He just has, he doesn't, you know, have quite the same take on it as myself and other individuals do.
So you had mentioned David Fravor, and I'm a former military guy. And so when a military person comes forward and starts talking about this stuff, I really like to listen. I'm also a scientist, and it really piqued my interest, especially with the experience that my wife and I had with seeing a giant, you know, flying triangle over Canton, yeah, Michigan. And, crazy stuff like that, and because I would have never wanted to do something like this, but now my interest is so piqued, I want to talk to everybody and see what their experiences are. But the David Fravor interview was very fascinating, because here you have a Top Gun pilot, you know, he's the one of the best, if not the best in the world at what he does. He's a no-nonsense guy, even though he joked around about going full afterburners at night over people's campsites and,
yeah.
You know, messing around. Even the most serious people have kind of a coyote part to them, you know, a trickster part to them. But what about when he was talking about his experience, what really got to you? What resonated with you, and why?
Performance characteristics, for one. I guess in some ways I'm a frustrated aviator, in the sense that I wanted to be one before I was a teenager. It's still on my bucket list. I still want to be a pilot, maybe a private license someday. But it was how he said it engaged with him. It intelligently noticed him. It turned towards him. It, you know, it noticed him, and also the interactions above the water, and that has led me down. Learned a lot about what's under the water in my research, and that was very interesting. What was that all about? You know, that, you know, so I guess that's some of it in a nutshell. You know, just the performance characteristics and the intelligent control and lack of control surfaces and visible propulsion and all that stuff.
There's a lot of people out there that are kind of calling what they're seeing, drones and things like that. What's your opinion on it? I have a very different take on what people are saying. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I don't think that's what's going on. I think historically, at least in modern age, these things have been regularly recorded since the late 40s, before any type of Homo sapien technology was, we were just breaking the sound barrier then. And then you look back at cave paintings that have depictions of UFOs and biblical times, different ancient civilizations. You know, I think the drone thing is the modern day swamp gas approach to it. I mean, drones, yeah, they're getting more sophisticated, but I was watching, I'm going to butcher his name, an interview with Michio Chakri, whatever the physicist on Rogan, and he was saying our newest hypersonic drone is unstable, and they actually had to put it to bed for a while, and the Russians announced they're doing it, so in return we're reopening our program again. So I'm not convinced that's what's going on at all. So,
yeah, I tend to agree. When you have an advanced aviator and a fighter pilot in David Fravor, and he cannot identify what's going on, and he's talking about this thing basically mirroring his actions and acting as if it is intelligently controlled. And then you've got people that come in and try to debunk, like, you know, Mick West is a very famous debunker, and he does some good stuff. I'm not going to discredit him or anything like that. But, you know, they come in and, you know, everything is the backside of an airplane, or it's a star, or it's swamp gas, or something. And it almost seems like that no matter what it is, that people, that once they have it in their mind that they're going to debunk something, they will find anything to say. And I don't know where that comes from and why they would question the testimony.
I don't know. I'm not an expert, but maybe it's just some people don't like to admit to the possibility of new information that they may or may not be privy to. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's an ego thing, you know.
It could be, or, you know, when something challenges your worldview, you know.
Yeah. People like worldviews, you know.
Yeah. And that was one thing you had mentioned in your bio, and that we've read to our audience earlier, is that these testimonials helped change your worldview. So how has that happened? What was your worldview, and now how has it changed it?
Well, I would say that previous to that, I was open to the idea of, for instance, extraterrestrial life. I was primed for it. Now it's even more, I guess you would say, exotic. Now I'm primed for the idea of extra-dimensional life, packed multiverse timelines. So it's just opened me up in of what is could be possible.
We had a guest on not too long ago, Jared Murphy, and he wrote the book, and it's fascinating. I can't wait to dig into this more, but he wrote the book, It's Not Aliens Worse, It's Us.
Mm-hmm. I want to check it out. Yeah.
He, and as far as I know, he's still in the process of revisions, and then he'll be releasing it, and you'd be able to pick it up on his website and Amazon and things like that. But he really focuses on the ancient alien hypothesis and kind of blowing that out of the water. And I think he's really onto something with his ideas, and he's going back all the way to about 76,000 years ago, where there was a huge super volcano that erupted in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And that wiped out a very advanced human population on this planet that were doing things that we can only dream of.
Mm-hmm.
His idea is that these UAPs and things that we're seeing are the remnants of this, you know, high-tech civilization. They're hiding in the ocean, they're hiding in different bases. What's your take on that? What do you think?
I definitely think there's four, but there's two now. A maximum of four extra-dimensional humans have been in our timeline since at least the beginning of recorded history. I'm going back Sumerian, Egyptian, those empires. I don't know about 76,000 years. I'm open to the idea of it. But as far as them being remnants of that civilization, from my testimony, I don't know. It's possible, but I think it's, well, we'll go on a little bit of a deep dive here, but reasoning for these two main groups that are both 52,000 years more advanced than us, they evolved separately in different, they went to different places of the galaxy, and then eventually had to come back. Primary reason for that was genetic engineering problems that they couldn't undo without accessing the source code, which is us, purebred Homo sapiens. And that was the pure motivation for to help out genetic errors, health problems, not healing fast enough. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that it's possible there could be UFO tech from that old civilization. I haven't come across that yet, but I've come across, you know, what I just went into, these other dudes and dudettes came back because they're having health issues that need to be remedied by a genetic refurbishment, I would say.
Jared talks about our DNA is basically like a backup or a source code for humans. And, you know, our DNA is like, you know, that backup for the human race. And, you know, with what you're saying there, that sounds like that could be a possibility as well, that it seems to come back to this DNA source code backup where, you know, we were down to 10,000 mating pairs after that explosion in, you know, 76,000 years ago. And we tried to reboot and we couldn't, you know, this is like the best that we could get to. And then we were hit again during the Younger Dryas back in about 12,600 years ago, which, you know, then we've got all the writings of the Great Flood. Mm-hmm. So, and then we got, you know, smacked around again after that. And so there's been these genetic bottlenecks that have happened, and we can trace that scientifically. There's no debate with that humans hit a genetic bottleneck starting about 76,000 years ago. We see that now with like cheetahs and things like that. That's why cheetahs are dying off. There was not very many of them left, and now that their genes are becoming so corrupted because they had so much inbreeding that now they're endangered, and it's not so much from hunting as it is their own genetics killing them. So
yeah,
they're ending up with diseases and things like that, which could possibly be why we're getting cancer more and more, things like that, if you think about it. But all right, so let's talk about some of your personal experiences and what's been going on with you. And I think this is where we kind of shift gears from like a UAP thing into a paranormal type of realm.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for sure.
Why don't you give us a little bit of background in that, and what really pulled you into that side of things? Because I know you mentioned that you are now doing research into and doing field expeditions. So give us a little bit background on that and what's going on.
Yeah, first, I guess you could say this has been the last about 5-6 months that I've kind of gotten into this and started having some experiences. The first was via CE5. You may or may not be familiar with Dr. Stephen Greer's the meditation technique, and you put out good intentions for consciousness. And for him, it was, you know, just put it out to whoever's out there. I was reaching out to a specific group, one of the two extra-dimensional future humans that are still currently here, called the Magina. And I'll just tell the story how it happened. So my girlfriend, she had a few drinks that night and was listening to music. I went to bed. She came to bed. I woke up. I couldn't go to sleep. So I took some recreational marijuana, which I've been doing that for about 6 or 7 years. And I know what that experience is like. So I took that. I was super calmed. My mind was super empty. So I went, now would be a good time to try the whole CE5 thing, because my mind was just totally like zen. And then, so I did that, did the meditation, I called out mentally, and, you know, I wasn't on any other substance or anything, mushrooms or any of that type of thing. But what seemed like less than probably 5 minutes, I noticed a distinct mental shift. Like I was no longer completely in control of my body, almost like, you know, here are things like sleep paralysis. These people call it mesmerization or hypnosis. And so I felt, and of course, you know, at the time, I'd actually had some undiagnosed PTSD I was dealing with. So I was, oh, what's going on? And then, you know, recreational marijuana causes some paranoia. So I'm like, these paranormal experiences, like it was each every step escalated, the fear went up one notch. So I was like, felt like my mind being tapped into. I was like, what is this? And then, you know, I think, I can't remember what they call it when your eyes are closed and you see little shapes moving around. But my eyes were closed, but I saw full color images of faces. And these were the future human imagine of faces, which have very high cheekbones, a kind of a chiseled chin. It's kind of like, nothing against this woman, but it's kind of like an exaggerated version of Reese Witherspoon. If you were to like say for a person, it looked like kind of this chiseled shape. And larger blue eyes that are about twice the size of ours go around the side of your head. And there's about five images. Each one lasted about a second. And they changed. And sometimes, you know, the hairstyles would even change. Your hair is typically blonde or translucent. But sometimes they wear wigs. Some even looked a little bit darker. But then after that happened, I was lying on the side of the bed, my right side of the pillow. I heard a woman's voice speaking. She was giving a command. She was saying, do not do this or do not hesitate to. And then when I heard her voice, it just freaked me out. The images already freaked me out. And I started to resist. I was like, I pulled back and her voice became garbled, like it was a bad connection. And then it just snapped out. Like, and then I woke up. Well, I wasn't awake, but I was asleep. I mean, I was awake, but then I opened my eyes. And I had the distinct feeling of I wasn't alone in the room. And I do know these people sometimes can levitate you from bed. You see it on the paranormal channels a lot, like Slapped Ham, Depths of Despair. You see people getting all lifted out of bed by some invisible entity. And I was hoping that my girlfriend would just hold me down if that happened. But that didn't happen. So that was the first experience I had. I don't know if you want me to keep going or if you want to dive into that one a little bit.
No, keep going. Very interesting. Keep going. Yeah. I know, by the way, this is, you know, when people do like a recreational drug, I mean, this is nothing new. The ancient shaman used to do this kind of stuff and to help change their mindset. So, you know, I know a lot of people have given Stephen Greer a lot of grief with the CE5 and, you know, it's a money grab and things like that. And I can't disagree and I can't agree. I don't really have a position on it, but what he does is it opens your mind and there are techniques. I mean, monks do this stuff. Look at Wim Hof. I mean, there are things that you can do just with the power of your mind. People that have healed themselves from sickness and, you know, all of this stuff. There's a whole bunch, I think, there that we don't tap in. And sometimes the use of these recreational drugs that can calm and focus you can actually trigger some of those abilities that some of us may have, which goes back to kind of the genetic thing of what do we got hiding in our genes?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. So dig into it. Let's go.
Yeah. So I've got a friend in Colorado Springs. He's definitely an experiencer of these people. He saw one in his house once and he yelled at it to get the F out. And then the lights flickered. And then he saw an orb flying around his basement and it went through the wall. And he showed me the video. And that I've learned through some of my research. There's a book called The Meadow Project. I think it's Trey Hudson's the author, that these guys were by a southern equivalent of Skinwalker Ranch at an undisclosed meadow because they didn't want to give away the location because they didn't want a bunch of people to flood it and mess it up. But one of their friends in the party actually turned into an orb for 500 yards, then reappeared as a person. He had no idea he'd even been transformed. So on a side note, that just seems like these orbs could potentially be some type of transport device of some sort. But anywho, he's an experiencer and he was having issues with stuff being moved around, poltergeist activity, sulfur smells, which I've come to learn my research is actually a residue of portals. Like the atmospheric interference of a portal, it just leaves that trace. And so one time when he had he was pretty sure there was a cloaked being in the house because they got these tech suits, which allow all that fancy stuff. I said, hey, well, you know, I've got a musical tribute to these people where I wear this glyph and I play this song on my guitar. I said, just cast that to your TV. See if they see the glyph and see what happens. And then that night I had an extremely bizarre lucid dream where they were basically, you know, dreams are a little more rubbery, a little more hard to prove, but it was, they were basically asking me all these questions, trying to learn who I was. And they were doing all kinds of what they call a glamour, not appearing how they actually are. So that one was not too stressful. But it was very interesting that I rarely have lucid dreams, that happened the same night that I said, hey, dude, cast this music thing with this shirt for the people in your house. And I think it caught their attention because they're very curious people in general. Recently, the most recent set, I talked to Burton from Lost in the Dark, and he gave me a good haunted location by my neck of the woods. I went there wearing this shirt, and then I have a recording of their natural language, which was recorded in the early 70s somewhere between Lake Tahoe and Yosemite National Park. A lot of people think it's Bigfoot recordings, but it actually, it's more of Magina natural language is what it sounds like with, it's a mixture of sort of Oriental sounds like samurai speak, like, mixed with like a guttural German with animal mimicry. So animal calls like, ooh, ooh, and sometimes like bird chirps and stuff. So I went out there playing that, and I verbally imitated it too. And this experience later became a little bit more compelling because we came back there a second time and had some really insane stuff happen. But so I came home that night and I had extremely restless sleep. My girlfriend said,
okay, I hate to interrupt you, but yeah. I got to ask, did your friend report anything back to you? Did anything happen on his end when he started casting the music and showing the glyph?
Not, he didn't report anything that night, but he had other things that were going on independent of that.
Oh, okay. So you told him to cast it, you know, to stream it through his TV with that glyph. And then you are the one that ended up having the lucid dream about these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
That didn't work out how you wanted it to.
Well, it worked out how I wanted it to, kind of, because I wanted, you know, as crazy as it is, I want to make contact, you know, and I sort of have and it's complicated, I think, because we're still pre-UAP disclosure. So I think there's a lot of secrecy going on with what they'll do or what they'll say or how present themselves. But no, he has continued to have off and on poltergeist activity. One time he got home, everything in the house was rearranged. He asked them not to come around when his son was there because it was freaking the son out, and they actually honored that. So they kept kind of quiet for a while. And so, yeah, this is like a longer story, but we think he might, they have breeding programs. Like I said, they need to mate with free range ancient humans. There is some circumstantial evidence that might suggest that's what's going on with him. But I mean, that's like another whole side story. But so anyway, I had that weird lucid dream. And then Bert supplied me with the site of that haunted place. And I've been there three times so far. And I won't give the location away right away in case, I don't know how many people see this and it gets flooded, but if you want to recreate some of this, anybody wants to recreate some of the stuff, you can try these approaches at other haunted locations. There's pretty much plenty of them all over the place. I went to the site. My girlfriend was with me. She was just kind of along for the ride, you know, playing this recording of this language, imitating it, different parts, had this shirt. And then that night I had extremely restless sleep, and I never have restless sleep. And at one point I woke up, well, I was in a dream. I thought it was a dream, but I think it was a partial state of mesmerization. And there's a window to the side of the bed, my right side. And there was a bright orange light. And my cat was bothered by it. And I was like, what's that? And then I had the silly notion that it's a supernova. And it wasn't, I thought it was stupid, but it was almost like the thought was planted there. That's a supernova. I need to go close the shades. And so when I went up to the shades, I saw a good 6-7 foot pure white Maginot walk right in front of the window. And I can't tell you that the fear was instant and primal because my brain didn't recognize it. I took a big inhale. And the next thing I woke up, it's super cliche. I was like, they're here. And you could hear the fear in my voice. My girlfriend had to calm me down. She's like, "What was that, a dream or were they there?" And I was like, well, I think it was a dream. And at that point, I didn't really know what had happened, but I hadn't really had nightmares since I was a kid. And I don't think it was a nightmare because it was, my brain didn't recognize what it was seeing and it didn't know how to process it. It was a large, pale, white humanoid shape walking in front of the window.
We're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsor.
Hi, this is Chris Lato of the Chris Lato YouTube channel, retired F-16 pilot turned UAP investigator, and you are listening to Wayne and Michelle on the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast.
What is up, you guys? It's your girl Gemma Jade from Gemma Jade YouTube, Moonbear Oracle, Paranormal Chop Shop, and Spaced Out Radio After Hours Show. You're here listening to Wayne and Michelle with the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast.
Hi, everyone. This is Jared Murphy of NotAliens.com, and you are listening to Wayne and Michelle from Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast.
What's up, everyone? This is Burton.
And Aaron from Lost in the Dark podcast.
And raise your horns because you're listening to Wayne and Michelle from Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast.
Hi, this is Sev Talk from MUFON and the author of You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens and the host of Alien Spirit TV with Sev on YouTube. You're listening to Wayne and Michelle at the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast.
Hey there, it's Richard Serrett, occasional weekend guest host of Coast to Coast AM and host of The Conspiracy Show. And you're listening to Wayne and Michelle's Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast.
Hi, this is Terry Lane Keel, Director of MUFON Memberships, investigator, demonologist, and author of Alien Healing, the true story of a benevolent extraterrestrial. And you're listening to Wayne and Michelle on the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael Schrett, military aerospace historian and private pilot, and you are listening to Wayne and Michelle at the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast, and we're glad to have you with us today.
Hi, this is Alex Anavitsky, and you're listening to Wayne and Michelle on the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters podcast. What I'd like to show you guys is the infinite pool of experience and awareness. which can be found at luciuslabs.com. And it's a book that I've written after basically meditating for 27 years. Basically, it goes over modern physics. It takes you all the way from modern accepted physics to understanding that we live in a layering of conscious types within time and that our consciousness is eternal.
And I think what was going on was, oh, you're not a ghost hunter. You know kind of what's going on here. Let's investigate you. And I wasn't given any direct message. I wasn't threatened. There was, you know, I wasn't injured that I know of. I think it was just when I woke up, when I saw it walk out and I woke up, I think that could have been the beginning of a missing time experience. I don't know for sure because I wasn't there to, it didn't have like a clock to measure it. So went back to the same site on the weekend with my girlfriend and a band buddy, kind of did the same thing. This time it was interesting. There were some ghost hunters there. They had REM pods, spirit boxes, stuff was getting set off. Did kind of the same thing. My girlfriend stayed back further in the woods. I went forward with my buddy. We, you know, tried to do some sounds, you know, and he had noticed an odd thing. It was like 60 degrees. We could see our breath, which was very interesting. We were getting some strong cold spot activity. And the girl, you know, we came back to where my girlfriend was and she says, you know, guys, they're all around me. Like, what are you messing with me? But my friend saw it too. And I saw some strange bioluminescent lights, but the cloaked silhouettes of what was their children running all around her because she was imitating these sounds too. One even touched her back, but she said, sorry, it was like they were sniffing her. And there was three adults in the trees that, you know, it actually looked kind of like the Predator suits. I had two eyewitness testimonies say these suits, it was like this, you know, the kind of silhouette that see very transparent, but what moved really fast, you could kind of see something. And so that happened. And you know, two people saw it, and one my friend, you know, the bass player friend, he saw, you know, they oftentimes run on all fours because they get to up to 10 feet by the time they're in old age. Yeah, I think it's maybe it's more comfortable or for lower the center of gravity. He says he saw this gray shape, small gray shape charging towards him. And then when he didn't run away from it, it just disappeared. And I unfortunately, I didn't see any of that. I saw these strange little bioluminescent markers in the areas that had been. I don't know if that was on purpose or if it was a technological artifact. So one final part to the story. I was like, okay, you know, I'm trying to like make contact, you know, my dream is to like, you know, because there have been select experiencers who have had open contact where there is no memory alteration, there is no mesmerization, there can actually be interaction. So I went back to that same site about 3 or 4 days later and basically had a gift bag of toys for their children. You know, even if the kids aren't into those toys, they do like Homo sapien artifacts. Like there's been testimonies where they've never seen a ballpoint pen before. You know, they have to be taught how to eat Jell-O because they think if you drink it, because it's just a different society. So I made up a little gift bag with Orion's belt and the black star, because the black star is of a religious significance, spiritual significance to them. And I kind of put it 10 feet off the trail. And a Homo sapien could have seen it, but I came back 3 or 4 days later. The bag was gone. I don't know who claimed it. It's a pretty remote area, but I put this little solar light flashing flower to kind of help mark it. That was still there. I kind of went around the area. Not much happened until the end. I heard rustling in the trees above me. This is about 2 in the afternoon, and leaves were breaking, like 30, 40 foot trees. Like, so it felt like something was watching me from above. And that's pretty much the latest that's happened at that site. And I'm looking for more, but it's important for me to do it during the summer because they're kind of seasonal. They like warmer weather. So say, you know, dead of winter in Michigan, these dudes won't be hanging around as much.
Wow. That's fascinating. Yeah. I see the paranormal stuff like that. See, to me, I put that in the category of like shadow people and things like that. And I don't like that stuff because I was charged by a very large, me and a singer from my old band and Eloise. We were down in the tunnels and we saw this huge, dark, shadowy figure down the tunnels. And it started charging us. No sound, but you could tell it was running. And when it hit us, it just dissipated into like a fine mist. And that was it. You know, I was like, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy.
That's probably the same type of being. You said this was some years ago?
Yeah, this was when we did our first album, 94. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. Quite a while ago, but of course, you know, everybody knows about Eloise and how it's haunted and this, that, and all the things that happened there. So,
but, well, basically, they live underground. They've lived subterranean habitations for quite some time, either old mine shafts, caves, tunnels, abandoned tunnels. And let me tell you a little bit about the suit functionality. The suit functionality has cloaking, levitation, telepathy, and intangibility. So when it turned into a mist, it probably shifted its atomic structure. And, you know, a lot of times that kind of behavior is just to scare people off. You know, if they're, at least in my experience, if they're really going to hurt you, you have to hurt them. There's a very interesting case in Bangor, Michigan, this was west of Kalamazoo, where there's kind of my drummer has a friend who, his older brother was kind of like a hoodlum teenager, kind of a vandal type guy. And they had all kinds of poltergeist activity in around their house. Just nothing malicious, just weird stuff going on. And what ended up happening was this teenager, I don't even know his name, so I can't get in trouble, but he lit one of the apple orchards on fire. And that really upset them. And their barn mysteriously burned down several times while the kids still lived there. And also while he was in this barn, a drumstick came flying at his head and lodged in the back of the wall. And a table with a stereo and CDs just mysteriously flipped over and dumped over. But it was almost like the kid had brought it on himself by burning down the apple orchard. But when the kid left, the high strangest was still there, but there was no more malicious intent kind of deal.
So with these experiences you've been having with this other race, what is something surprising that you've learned from contact with them? Do you think they have a message? Are they telling you things?
I think I'm being closely observed because I think I'm very hot on their trail, and I don't think they necessarily have a protocol for, especially pre-disclosure for people who know who they are. There seems to be a lot of evidence that suggests, okay, no direct contact, but masquerade around as, well, they take it on themselves to masquerade around as ghosts and tell people they're evil spirits and their spirit box and things. I think it's a lot of times it's just something their kids do to play. Go play with the wildlife, you know, go mess around with them kind of thing. I think as far as conscious messages, I was pretty close on that first experience because a woman was actually speaking to me, but my fear got so shot through the roof, and they're like, well, that's not working out because, you know, it interferes with their electronics when people are in a, for telepathy. If you're in a heightened state, it's harder for their electronics technology to work properly. And, as far as just very basic messages, I think the woman might have been trying to tell me to calm down because it was interfering with it. And I sometimes wish, you know, they would just send a text message or a call. You could communicate via our technology, make it a little less stressful. But there was no message, positive or negative. I wasn't warned. I think I'm being very curiously observed. Maybe even my YouTube videos are being very curiously observed. You know, I'm friends with some more prominent researchers, and maybe, you know, they're just seeing to wait and see what I do next. And then they'll kind of, okay, you know, I would like to, you know, once I would like to grow my channel, then, you know, get some of, at least even just like fleeting image, get them on camera. And, you know, because there have been people that have built relationships with these people. I think there's a lot we can learn from them, just out of pure curiosity sake, you know.
So why you, though? I mean, is there something maybe from your past, maybe growing up when you were a child, any experiences you had there that maybe you've been watched for a long time?
Yeah, that's an interesting point that you bring that up. There were things that happened in the last 5 years that may not have been directly related to me, but I think it was them interacting with other people. And I happened to be in the middle of it. Like I lived for a couple months in Wisconsin. And, you know, a lot of, in haunting lore, you often hear like, when a change comes to the house, the activity kicks up kind of thing. And this happens with these dudes too, because the testimony of Charles Hall, for instance, whenever a new airman would come in, they'd rifle through the airman's possessions and check out the new guy. And I had a little bit of an experience of that when I was living with these people, these friends in Wisconsin. I moved in, and then the door, you know, for a couple of times would mysteriously open on its own. And there was knocks on the door with nobody there. This was before I got there. I think they were close to a habitation area anyway, but there was the woman who lived there was in another room. And then a fake version of that woman walked up the stairs that somebody else saw. So it was like a hologram or something. I don't know if it had anything to do with me specifically. The thing is it's a little tricky because there could be a longer story arc, but they have, you know, like I said, they have the ability to alter memories. And when I talked to, you know, the prominent author and experiencer, Ryan Musgrave Evans, we got a friendly email dialogue going. And when I told him about the CE5 thing, and he was like, well, that's very likely your first conscious experience. You know, I don't know. I don't know. He's in contact with these people on a semi-regular basis, you know, and, you know, maybe he knows something that I don't, you know, I don't know, but I've aggressively sought it out in the last couple of years, just in the same way that I aggressively sought out music. Like I felt compelled. It's something I have to do at this point in my life. So I don't know if something was switched on, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, I think as musicians and artists in general, especially with music, when you're messing around with frequencies and different sounds and things like that, I think that has a lot. I mean, you're putting a lot of waves of energy out there, even though it's sound energy, it's still energy. And definitely feel like, I mean, I've played when I was in the bands back in the day, we played very large venues of very large groups of people. And it's very easy to influence people with just music and sound. I mean, they've been doing it for thousands of years in the military with cadences and,
yeah,
you know, to get people fired up and things like that. So you can watch a crowd's mood and everything change with these frequencies. And, It's very fascinating, and I've seen a commonality. One of the things I've learned doing this is there seems to be a connection between people who are very artistic and open with that creativity, and it doesn't really seem like it matters what the artistry is. Okay. It just seems that people that are artistic seem to have a more open mind to be in communication with these things, or, you know, this might be what they called the muse back in the day, right? This is how, you know, they actually gave it an embodiment of when you were being influenced to create something, and when you were creative, that was your muse coming through and things like that. So it's very fascinating, and I think we lost a lot of that with our modern technology over the last, probably since the Industrial Revolution, we've become more robotic, I guess, in closing down our minds versus, you know, what we were pre-Industrial Revolution. So jumping back real quick into UAPs, another person you had mentioned in your bio, which I find this person fascinating, and I want to get your thoughts on him, is Bob Lazar. And people are all over the spectrum with this guy. And I will say this. I don't have a dog in the fight with Bob Lazar, whether he's truthful or not, but I do find that either what he's saying is truthful about being in the S4 location and the technology they had way back when in the 70s when he was there, or he's extremely lucky because they have him on record saying, you know, they use these hand scanning technologies and things that people had no idea, and they were using them then. And now we use, you know, biometrics and things like nothing. You put your thumb on your cell phone and, oh, look, it opens up. And by the way, you have access to the whole world in your pocket on that cell phone. So, you know, I think there's some credibility to what he has to say. So what is it about Bob Lazar that really even increased your passion for learning about UAPs, UFOs, and this whole topic?
Well, partly it was the way he described, well, there's a couple of things, but how they were allowed to actually conduct their experiments and the amount of compartmentalization and secrecy that, I mean, that's something I've seen in other people I've researched too, where the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And it just seemed like, yeah, that sounds about right. And he didn't really want to touch the subject. I don't know how Jeremy Corbell got him on Rogan, but it just seemed like he hasn't really, at least historically, he hasn't gained a whole lot, or he's lost a lot from talking about this. You know, back when he came out in the late 80s and started talking about it, he the death threat. I mean, I don't know all the exact things happened, but his life was kind of turned upside down, and you know, living hell for a while, the way it sounded. He just kind of retreated, and he took a big risk by going on Rogan, just that in general. And he seems to be, well, not exactly vindicated, but somewhat more vindicated. You know, there's, like you said, there's this huge discrepancy in all the different viewpoints about him. But one of the guys I have researched, Dan Burrish, part of MJ-12, also worked at S4. And he corroborates a lot of the vehicles that Lazar had seen. So I also see that other witnesses have seen a lot of the same technology he was privy to. And just everything about the gravity amplifiers and element 115. And, you know, I can't verify it, but it's all super interesting. And, you know, it would take, you know, especially with the Nellis Air Force Base dude, Charles Hall, but with Lazar, to take someone with an extremely wild imagination with too much time on their hands to just be making this stuff up, and to at such a high risk endeavor to, you know, have your credibility ruined, be persecuted. And
risk and very little reward. I mean, yeah. I don't see him having a very good life because of him coming out and saying what he said, He had a very promising career as a scientist, and I know he has his business in Michigan here somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's mid Michigan, actually.
Yeah.
I drove by it recently. My buddy's, oh, that's where Lazar lives. Oh, I didn't know.
But, you know, yeah, now Lazar is a Michigan boy. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, why would somebody take that risk and put that out there when, you know, they're very, obviously, the guy's extremely intelligent. He knows what he's talking about. And I mean, the guy was putting jet engines and rocket engines on cars. And you know,
for sure.
Come on. All right. Well, what else do you got going on, man? Do you got stuff coming up in the future that you're doing? Any researching, field work, anything like that coming up?
I'm going to be hitting a few different sites. I'm going to be hitting as many sites, especially this summer, as I can with haunted areas. And you know, I try to apply what I've already been doing to the previous sites with these other sites. And I'll be ended up in Nevada in a couple of months. So I'm going to try to... There's some sites that the Twin Paranormal, it's a big ghost hunting group called Twin Paranormal, and they have hit a few sites out there, and they've had actual imaginary interactions. They're just calling it ghost interactions. I'm going to try to hit a couple of those sites get a nice night vision camera. So if we do catch something, I want to document it. My solo project stuff. I've got a song about some of the stuff that, you know, I'm going to be releasing a record, an EP called Future Human, which is going to have, for those in hard rock and metal, it's going to have some of these kinds of themes on there. It's going to have a Bowie cover and stuff. So, that'll be this summer. Otherwise I'm going to, keep updating the channel. Like I said, I'm hoping to get some good footage or even just photos. My ultimate goal, who knows when that will be, is to probably be post disclosure, I'm guessing, but whenever that happens, but try to get me talking to one of these dudes on camera, hopefully, maybe something. It's a dream, but
you know. Yeah, that would be amazing if you could pull that off.
And they can learn many languages. So, I mean, many of them know English. So, yeah.
Speaking of Nevada, my wife and I, we got married in Lake Tahoe 5 years ago, and we stopped by the Clown Hotel.
Okay.
Awesome. That place is, that's been a place of many investigations and creepy as heck in the middle of the desert in this little town, man. And it's just, what a place to have. And yeah. And I think when we were there, you could buy the hotel. It was up for sale.
Okay.
And I think it had been up for sale for a while. Nobody wanted to buy it. Just, I mean, there's a graveyard out behind, you know, in the back of it. It was crazy. And like, no, there's no hope for me in that place. So we took some pictures and we left. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another one is a Stanley Hotel in Colorado. That's haunted.
Oh, yeah.
That's super haunted. I'd like, you know, I used to live out there, so I'd like to try to spend some time there at some point too, you know.
Yeah, do some investigations out there. I know that place has been looked at quite a bit too.
Oh yeah.
All right, so as we wrap this up, is there anything else you wanted to talk about? I know I wanted you to get your channel out there and any information where people can find, you know, websites, social media, YouTube, all of that stuff.
Yeah, you can look up it's right now it's called the Future Human Channel, and it's got the Magina Orion glyph on the cover. If you want to check out some music about some stuff, you can check out Captain Colnut with a K either on Bandcamp or on Facebook. Otherwise, I'm looking forward to exploring more and seeing what more kind of cool stuff I can find, I guess you would say.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, because we would love to get you back on here as you start digging more and more in Michigan and you know, bringing that back to us and putting it out there and let people know, hey, Michigan is a hot spot, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We are a hot spot. It might have something to do with all the water, the lakes, the geography, everything.
Real quick, I know that I listened to your Eyes of March episode, and I know the Magina fly triangles and that recurring March thing, just a wild theory. Like, I remember there's some woman who got pregnant or something. Like,
yes.
Maybe that's like, you know, as weird as creepy as it is, maybe that's like mating season or something, you know, just throwing it out there.
It could be, because if you go back through our Facebook and look at when people report a lot of the big black triangles that float around here and stuff, and then crazy things happening with them, it seems like it's between March and April, like right in there, March, April, maybe a little bit of February. And it's triangles and, you know, more triangles, and then it goes dead.
That's funny, because my friend in Colorado, of course, he lives close to the Air Force bases. His activity heightened in those months, which was very interesting. I can't prove anything, but it's very fascinating.
It would be a good piece of data to be able to go through and collect how many people. And I think there's the National UFO Recording Center, and you can go through and look and see what dates seem to be prominent with certain sightings. But yeah, for sure. It just seems like, you know, from the early 90s to currently, it's UFO, the flying black triangles. Either they have the light in each corner, like my wife and I saw, or they have the one in the middle that, you know, is kind of related to the TR-3D. And I know people like to say that's what it is, but I'm telling you, there's no way that was ours. There's no way that was possible. None.
Real quick, I'll just say if we had a TR-3B, I think it would have been used to our advantage by now.
Absolutely. It would be out there. We couldn't keep the stealth fighter and the stealth bomber quiet.
Yeah.
You know, we had people like Jim Goodall out there in the desert taking pictures of them flying it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the best now that they could do, which would make it more difficult, would be these drones. You know, the drones are kind of small, about the size of a car, and they can do all kinds of things. And they look creepy as hell. I mean, I forgot the latest drone that they have. I think it's called the Foxbat or something like that. But, I mean, it looks like it could be a flying saucer. I mean, geez, it's insane.
Right on.
Again, thanks for joining us, and this was awesome, and we cannot wait to hear more from you, and maybe toward the end of the year, after you do your summer of investigations, we'll get you back on here and see what kind of new revelations you might have.
Yeah, that sounds great to me, man. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. And so just one more time, how can people find your channel, and what should they be looking for?
Yeah, look for the Future Human channel. It's got a glyph of Orion's belt on there. And if you want to hear some music that's based on some of this, look up for Captain Colnott with a K. And that's on Bandcamp and also on Facebook.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Jeff, for joining us. And we will be talking to you soon. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks.
That was a very interesting interview. And Michelle, I know you weren't here to help with the interview
or experience it firsthand, but I was able to listen to it.
Exactly. So what are your thoughts on everything that you heard?
Well, here's the thing, you know, once you think that you know quite a bit into what is going on in the world, then something else is added to the plate.
Yeah, I, you know what?
Lots to dive into that, you know, the whole term of, you know, the Magina, you know, my mind goes straight to the djinn and stories that, you know, we've recently heard from friends of ours.
Yeah, that are from certain areas of the world, like Macedonia, where, you know, very old country and religions that have been around for a couple thousand years, and mythology and the whole nine yards.
Oh yeah, we've got some stories that we are hunting down to share with everyone. Absolutely, some crazy stuff.
Yeah. One of the things I noticed with his interview and his experiences is that there seems to be these commonalities that are starting to really show themselves with whatever this phenomenon is. You look at all the other interviews we've done with people, and there's just certain things, such as a manipulation of perception, a futuristic people coming back for DNA to help or re-engineer their DNA because they have issues or health issues. That might be something connected to like cattle mutilation too. People ask, you know, why would aliens travel all this way just to come here and take out our cows? Well, it's the same thing as why would aliens come and observe us doing nuclear weapons, and then you're going to try to explain to us that they don't want us doing that, but yet they're not doing anything to stop it. Because if they can manipulate reality or change your brain function to change your perception as to what you're seeing, whether it's a little goblin, a gnome, a fairy, or a short gray, you know, if they can do that, then why don't they just stop all of the nuclear bombs and get rid of them and just show themselves and tell us, hey, don't do this? Which makes me wonder what's really the objective here. And I just, I don't like the secrecy of them. And it's been 1,000 years, 2,000 years. These things are reported all the way back into medieval times. So just show yourselves. Let's go. Step out of that fifth dimension. I think people would be ready to accept, you know, these things, whatever they are at this point, if we can even comprehend them.
Feeling that the population would be hiding in bunkers with about 10 packs of water bottles.
Oh, don't forget and the toilet paper. Right. I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's like Jeff was saying about being primed by our media and culture of being accepting of these aliens and alien life. And by alien, I'm not thinking extraterrestrial anymore. I'm thinking something else. Something that's here, but not here. And it's been here for as long as we have, if not longer. And I think we're sharing space on this planet with something, but it's a different kind of space. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it.
Time will tell.
Yep. All right. So before we get out of here, let's tell everybody a little bit about the show and where they can find things. So don't forget that we are on YouTube. Please search us out by typing in Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast. It's all one word, so you'll find us.
Just remember, if that's not your main listening platform, because we're not a video podcast, you know, it still go on over and like and follow us there. If you have a story you would like to tell, we would like to talk to you. You can reach out to us at mi.ufo.podcast@gmail.com. Send us a brief summary of your experience and we'll contact you to discuss things further and try to get you or your story on the podcast.
And if you do not think that in that news article that was not Crash Bandicoot, that's the email address you want to email to let us know what you think that creature is. But if you do like the podcast and would like some awesome swag, head on over to our online store at miufopodcaststore.online.
It's how Wayne has been recognized, wearing his shirt out and about and people recognizing him.
Yeah.
Don't forget to check out our Patreon page if you would like to support the podcast there. It is patreon.com/MIUFOSPEP, where you can sign up. We can't wait to give you a shout out for all of your support.
You can also help support the podcast by buying us a cup of coffee. The links for that is provided in the show notes, just like everything else. All right, Michelle, I think it's time for us to get out of here. What do you think?
Yep, I think it's time to wrap it up for the night.
I could not agree more. And everybody, we hope you enjoyed the podcast and have a great night.
Have a great night, everyone.
And remember, keep your eyes to the sky.
You have been listening to the Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters Podcast. You can reach us at mi.ufo.podcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at mi_UFO and join our Facebook group by searching for Michigan UFO Sightings and Paranormal Encounters. So until next time.